This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk with two guests from different political perspectives about the top state and national news in politics this week, including the big presidential primary wins by Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and John Kasich, and the prospects of a contested or brokered GOP convention. Our guests will also weigh in on President Barack Obama's nomination for U.S. Supreme Court Justice and the politics over that, and several bills taken up by the state Senate. And we welcome the story that you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Michelle Litchens, a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Good to have you back. And joining us for the first time on The Week in Review is Kelly Wills, an associate professor of communication and theater arts at UW-Marshfield, Wood County. She's also a blogger at the Huffington Post and the American Association of University Professors Academe blog. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Joy.
Thanks for joining us for the first time on The Week in Review. Well, let's start off with the presidential race and all the politics there. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and John Kasich all came away from Tuesday's primaries with some big victories, but Marco Rubio dropped out after losing his home state of Florida to Trump. Now there's renewed talk of the possibility of a brokered convention this summer, or at least a contested convention. Michelle, you first. What do you make of where the GOP presidential field is today?
You know, I never would have imagined that we would be where we are right now a few months ago. I was one of those people who said that Trump is just going to be a blip. He's going to come in and be loud, and he's not going to make it through once the primaries start. And then you start to, you know, when you're talking to folks out there, you hear the anger because they're just disappointed that Republicans haven't done more over the years. They're angry that government's so bloated and big and whatnot. And Trump is really, he is speaking about their anger. And so he's resonating with some people. That being said, everything that we know to be true from the past is kind of out the window when it comes to presidential politics and campaigning right now. But I do think, and I've said this for some time, I do think that we will end up going to a brokered convention. I don't think Donald Trump is going to get to that that magic number of delegates before the primary season is done. And it wouldn't be the first time. You know, I was a delegate to a national convention a few years ago. It is fun to watch that process happen locally. I mean, the delegates are elected. You've got to be a county party member and be a delegate there, and then you're elected at your district level, and our district caucuses haven't even happened in Wisconsin yet. So it's for me as a Republican, it's kind of exciting to watch. I'm also very disappointed that the two leading candidates are not the most popular candidates in the Republican Party, so that part is a little bit disheartening, but you know, I'm kind of excited about watching this process.
Yeah, and we'll get Kelly's reaction in a moment. But when you say you think it will go to a brokered convention, who do you think will emerge the GOP nominee?
I'm not exactly sure. We've heard Paul Ryan say that he believes it should be someone who wanted to be president. You know, and they do have some of the rules set that you have to nominate someone who's won eight states. So we will see what happens when we get there. Donald Trump, right now, if you look at the numbers, you know, 63% of the Republicans are voting against this guy. So the majority of the Republicans are not coalescing around him because, quite honestly, as myself and many others believe, he's not a Republican. He is not speaking from the philosophy where I come from. So we're not excited about this guy. I could handle Ted Cruz. I'm not excited about him either, quite honestly. So we'll see what happens. But it wouldn't surprise me to see someone else's name come from the floor. I mean, it has happened in the past in our nation's history. So, but like I said at the beginning, Joy, everything we know to be true about politics is gone. The status quo is gone, and we are flying by the seat of our pants right now.
We'll get to the Democratic side as well, Kelly, but what are your thoughts as you see what's happening on the GOP side?
So every time Trump wins more delegates, I see two things happening. I see more and more think pieces about, one, how he's able to say whatever he wants and get away with it, and then two, who are the people who are supporting Trump? And I think to the first question, one of the most interesting articles I read on this is how Trump is able to use this rhetorical device called paralipsis, which enables him to publicly say things he can later disavow without ever having to take responsibility for his words. And so Professor Jennifer Mercier writes, for example, say you want to imply that your coworker takes too many coffee breaks without actually accusing him of wasting time at work, you might say something like, I'm not saying that he drinks more coffee than anyone else in the office. Every time I go on a break room, he's in there. So again, he's used this device to deflect criticism that he's courting white supremacists when he was called off for tweeting a Mussolini quote. As Mercier notes, again, Trump knows that this is interesting content that attracts retweets, followers, audiences, and media attention, and votes. However, what we've seen is that there are real consequences of this inflammatory rhetoric, even if the purpose is to, quote, start a dialogue or retweet something interesting. So rhetorically speaking, Trump has really mastered this so much that he really can say just about anything without affecting his poll numbers. He just said his foreign policy advisors would be himself. If any other candidate made that kind of statement, it would be the end, if not the beginning of the end of their political career. Yet with Trump, here we are. And so I think that's really important to understand why he is able to say the things that he does. And then secondly, I really agree with Michelle on this. I think, again, in terms of who is supporting Trump, we really cannot, I think it's naive to paint all Trump supporters as, you know, racist, white supremacist, neo-Nazis. I think we need to really look at the fact that he is really tapping into anxieties and worries. You know, 8 in 10 white working American class citizens in this country still feel like they're in a recession. They have been hit hard by jobs that pay by the hour that have been stagnant or even losing value over time. So it's really sort of a volatile cocktail of economics and cultural changes and demographic shifts that have been happening. And I think part of this has to do with, again, this sort of populist backlash against liberalism. There have been some really great pieces about, you know, the way that he's been able to tap into this. And I think we really need to pay attention to how he's able to do so. So, Thomas Frank wrote a really interesting piece about the fact that he's talking about trade a lot, actually. And so one of the things that people have really been sort of ignoring is how much he talks about these destructive free trade deals our leaders have made, that many companies have moved their production facilities to other lands, how he will, you know, personally make these phone calls, or make these companies' CEOs come back and sort of, you know, make America great again. As Frank points out, you can sort of look at, you know, the coordinate with the racist Google searches, but they also coordinate with deindustrialization and despair with the zones of sort of, quote, economic misery that 30 years of Washington's free market consensus have brought to the rest of America. Yeah. And so, again, I think this really is a backlash against liberalism that has been bridging for slowly a decade, as well as, you know, in terms of the activist violence itself.
And interesting. So, Kelly, let me jump in, because I have a clip of, speaking of political rhetoric and inflammatory language, some are saying that Donald Trump is inciting violence with some of the things that he's been saying on the campaign trail. Let's take a listen to him on I believe this was on CNN, talking about what might happen if he does not get the GOP nomination at the Republican convention this summer.
I think we'll win before getting to the convention, but I can tell you, if we didn't, and if we're 20 votes short, or if we're, you know, 100 short, and we're at 1,100 and somebody else is at 500 or 400, because we're way ahead of everybody, I don't think you can say that we don't get it automatically. I think you'd have riots.
And I'm going to go to Michelle first on this. There will be riots, Michelle, he says, if he doesn't get the nomination.
Your head just has to shake when someone who is supposed to be a presidential nominee says that out loud. That's embarrassing as a Republican that he's allowed to actually say that and get away with it, and people continue to support this person. I was so proud of Speaker Paul Ryan for saying, you cannot say that out loud. You cannot encourage violence. That is unacceptable. And, you know, everyone is passionate. We've had primaries since the beginning of our country, and everyone is passionate and excited about their candidate, and they work as hard as they can to get their candidate the nomination. And then, as has always happened in years past, you know, you're excited until that convention and your candidate might not get it, but you know what? That's all right. You've got another 4 years, and then you all coalesce behind your guy. Right now, Donald Trump is saying, if we don't get our way, you know, our people are going to riot in the streets, because even if we win the plurality and we don't have enough votes, he thinks he should get his way anyway. And yet he is giving his supporters permission to be violent. And that is not what a good leader does. I am nervous about what he is going to incite from his followers. And it is not healthy. I mean, we need a leader to say that I believe in these ideas, and if we don't get our way, you know what, that's okay, because this is a democracy, we all need to fight for our ideas. But by encouraging and by not saying that they, you know, cannot be violent, he is encouraging that this anger among his followers to, you know, to riot if he does not get his way at this national convention. And that's a little bit unnerving.
Now, Ted Cruz, though, Michelle, said that there would be chaos, and he does not believe, he thinks contested convention, okay, maybe one in which he, Cruz, would emerge the victor, but that to have the Republican elite go in there and give it to somebody else like Paul Ryan or Jeb Bush or whoever it might be, he says that's not that's not fair to the people who have been voting in the primaries. What about that?
Well, there's a few different things there. One, how disappointing that Ted Cruz thinks that the delegates going to the national convention are the party elite. He knows these people. Those delegates, and again, having been one of those and fought for one of the three delegate positions in the 6th Congressional District, those are the people that are making the phone calls, knocking on the doors, doing the work, and they've been out on the streets for years. That's how you earn a delegate position. I can promise you that no one from any establishment is going to tell the delegates who work very, very hard to get to the national convention, no one is going to tell them how to vote. But when he is talking about chaos, I can see a little bit of chaos. I don't necessarily see, you know, chaos as violence. I see those as two very different things. It's going to be a little bit chaotic if we go to a contested convention, but that's also kind of exciting. So I think those are maybe two different ways to look at craziness that might be going on, but rioting in the streets, that is not acceptable.
Yeah. Kelly, what do you think?
I completely agree. I think, again, language has consequences, and to assume that what he's saying does not have consequences in terms of how his supporters are reacting to this is just pretty naive, and I think it's false for him to say that. I also agree that, you know, with the contested convention, I think on both sides, there is just, you know, the Bernie or bust people as well as some of the Trump supporters just feel as though the will of the people will not be heard. And so with this idea of rioting in the streets, you know, I do worry that people will feel that if Trump actually does win enough of the delegates so that there isn't a contested convention, I don't know what the GOP is going to do at that point, because if the people feel as though, you know, the party establishment is taking away their voice and taking away the will of the people, then I don't know what that's going to look like. It scares me as well. And so I just don't, and again, we are just on uncharted territory right now. This is really historical. And so from a rhetorical standpoint, and from where I mean, this is fascinating to watch and to write about, but again, in reality, this is also very scary.
We are talking with Kelly Wills, who's an associate professor of communication and theater arts at UW-Marshfield, Wood County, also a blogger, and Michelle Litchens, a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative, our two guests during this edition of The Week in Review. We'll talk more about news on the presidential campaign trail and also move into state politics as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking today to Michelle Litchens and Kelly Wills about the top stories in state and national politics. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Talking about reviewing the week in state politics. First, Aaron in Madison joins us. Hi, Aaron.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. What did you want to say?
Well, it was really more or less about Donald Trump and everything and how he's really bad news for the country. He claims that he's going to be making this country great again, and he's always talking about winning, but the truth be told, our country should not be viewed as a game. It should be viewed as we the people of the people, which is why I believe a Democrat should be in the office versus a person who really can't even be considered a Republican. He's also said that that Kim Jong-un is an amazing leader. He says that he's best friends with Putin. Although Putin is not necessarily a terrorist, he still is not really the best president for Russia and stuff like that.
All right, and Aaron, thank you very much. We got a lot of callers and a lot of comments. Edna in Camp Douglas is next. Hi, Edna.
Yeah, I think these people are being disingenuous to Trump, and I am not a supporter. I think he's an idiot. But I think he's trying to warn them. They went through this with the Democratic convention back in the 60s where they had riots there in Chicago, and what they're doing is they're taking and they're reaping the results of the rhetoric from people like Rush Limbaugh and some of these people on Fox Network, and now they can't handle it. They don't know what to do with it.
Thank you, Edna. I'm just trying to get a number of comments on him. And Michelle, Edna saying she doesn't like him either. Aaron had a lot of reasons why he doesn't like Trump, but she says he's just trying to warn people what's going to happen if there is this brokered convention.
Could be, but at the same time, I believe he has the responsibility to say it's not right, to tell his supporters you might want to riot in the streets, but we can't take our anger to the level of violence. He has that responsibility, and yet he's not. He's saying this might happen, and you guys have to deal with it because you need to give me my way and make sure that I get the nomination.
Yeah, and Tim on Facebook writes that the notion of Paul Ryan being selected at a contested convention, a brokered convention, well, that sure doesn't sound like democracy. Sounds like an oligarchy. Kelly, what do you say?
I would agree with that. And again, Paul Ryan has said over and over again that he has no intention of running. But again, if we were to see that happening, where the establishment Republicans, because of what is happening with Trump, you know, pick someone else as their nominee, again, I think there is going to be some backlash there, and I think part of this has to do with the fact that so many Republicans didn't disavow Trump right away from the beginning. You saw, even at one of the last debates, when the question was asked, would you still support Trump if you were to win the primary? Every single person on that stage said that they would, you know, and so again, I think we needed more leaders earlier on to sort of disavow this language, disavow Trump completely, and I think you saw so too many of them just playing nice in the beginning, worried about attacking Trump because of the repercussions of that, and now we see that this has just gone way too out of control.
Yeah, and Michelle, how do you respond to saying that Paul Ryan selected, that's an oligarchy?
No, I mean, again, this is not the government choosing. Think about who are the delegates at the Republican convention. Now, you can say at the Democrat convention, so many of the delegates are superdelegates, they are not chosen by the people. But at the Republican convention, every person there who is going to be a delegate, barring, I think, two or three people per state, are elected locally. This is not the establishment coming in and choosing your candidate. If Donald Trump is only getting 35% of the vote from Republicans, he is not winning a clear majority, and so he does not deserve that nomination outright. So someone at the convention is going to, you know, negotiate their way. They're going to make deals with other people. I believe it's going to be someone who was on the ballot who wanted to run for president, although I would love to see Paul Ryan take that nomination, but he's repeatedly said that he doesn't want it. So, but this is not the establishment coming in and choosing anything. I mean, if we see it come down to that place, you are going to see people who have been knocking on doors and making phone calls for 20, 30, 40 years. Those are the people who are going to be choosing who is the Republican nominee.
Yeah. So John Kasich, after winning Ohio, says he is going to stay in the race. Should he stay in the race, Michelle?
I think he has every right to stay in the race. As long as he's got the money to stay there, he has to give the voters a choice. And it'll be a clear choice. You know, you've got someone who's never participated before, who does not seem to be able to control the words coming out of his mouth. And then you have Senator Ted Cruz, who's in the Senate, and then you have a governor. So the Republicans who have yet to vote in a primary across the country, they've got an opportunity to make their choice. And if they choose to continue to vote for Ted Cruz or for Donald Trump, then John Kasich, you know, might see himself fall out before the convention happens.
Yeah, former Governor Tommy Thompson endorsed Kasich and is heading the Kasich, Wisconsin effort. Your thoughts, Michelle, on who Wisconsin voters are going to vote for on April 5th?
You know, it will be very interesting because you hear different pockets of people talking about different things. I'm not exactly sure. I think Governor Thompson carries a lot of weight with Republicans in Wisconsin. For the individuals like myself, Marco Rubio was my guy. He's not there anymore, so I need to make a decision. And when you've got Governor Thompson out there rallying people around Governor Kasich, you know, maybe he is going to be able to swing some votes over in his direction. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. And Kelly, we are going to talk about the Democratic side, too. But what are your thoughts on who might win the GOP side in Wisconsin?
I think Kasich stands a really good chance to win in Wisconsin, simply because I think a lot of his policies and things that he's done are very similar to Governor Walker's. And so Republicans who like Governor Walker, I think, are really going to like Governor Kasich, again, in terms of the ways that he has sort of, dealt with unions, the way that he has, and he is a really polarizing figure in Ohio, just as Governor Walker is a polarizing figure in Wisconsin. And so I do believe that, again, because they have similar policy stances on a lot of things, that I think he could do really well here.
Yeah. Now, Marco Rubio, Michelle, your guy, had a news conference of sorts yesterday and is apparently close to endorsing Ted Cruz, but isn't quite there yet. He said Cruz was the only conservative left in the race, and he does want to deny Donald Trump this nomination. So do you think that Ted Cruz is the only conservative left in the race and should be worthy of conservatives' support?
Yeah. There are so many different schools of thought out there. Again, as Kelly said, we are in uncharted territory. Ted Cruz is a conservative. There is absolutely no doubt about that. I have always been concerned that Ted Cruz has been so conservative over the years. He's isolated himself even from the senators that he works with. I believe Lindsey Graham kind of endorsed him,
yep.
But even the people that he goes to work with on a regular basis can't stand the guy. So when it comes to supporting him, you know, so if he wins the primary and becomes the nominee, I don't think he stands a chance to win the general election. So we'll have to see. You know, Marco Rubio was such a positive person. He had this incredible story about how wonderful our country is and how we have to keep moving in that same direction. But you could tell that the electorate this year did not want to hear a positive message. They are angry. They are fed up. The government hasn't been listening to them. And so they decided not to go with that positive message. And then both Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are talking about that anger on the campaign trail, and so that's resonating with people.
Well, we should move on to the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton swept Bernie Sanders in all five states on Tuesday. Kelly, did she essentially wrap up the nomination, or are you not quite that confident yet?
So it depends on who you talk to. So some have declared this is Clinton's win, that Sanders has no chance. Others have said that, again, if you look at the math, Sanders still does stand a chance. And so, again, many have argued that Sanders should just drop out of the race so that he still has a shot. And so we're not really sure here. A lot of the headlines pointed to the fact that, you know, Clinton is winning, but Sanders is no loser, that even though maybe he lost during this time around, that he still, you know, pushed Clinton to the left a little bit in terms of the narrative there. And that's a good thing. But he would still need to win the remaining delegates by around a 58 to 42% margin and his favor to exceed his target in 6 of the 8 contests over the next month. He's a really strong favorite in the caucuses in Idaho, Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, and Wyoming. And Senator Sanders is also a strong favorite in the Utah primary.
And how do you see it, Michelle?
I don't see Sanders dropping out. I mean, he has been a believer since he was in college. He is in this because he wants to make a difference. And when you're in something because you want to make a difference, I'm sure he's not going away anytime soon. He is going to keep Hillary Clinton moving to the left, which, again, is good for my side when it comes to the general election. But I don't think there's a reason for him to drop out of the primary yet. And again, as Kelly said, some of the states that are coming up, especially on the East Coast, I believe Sanders is going to do fairly well in those primaries. Is he going to walk away with enough delegates to win? Probably not, but he's certainly going to keep the primary going until the convention.
Yeah. You know, after her big wins, Hillary Clinton, in her victory speech, talked about moving forward to the general and such. And a number of male TV commentators, including Brit Hume and Joe Scarborough, they both come to mind, tweeted out comments about, "Smile, Hillary. You won, Hillary. You know, quit shouting. Smile." And that caused quite an uproar on social media. Kelly, we spoke to you before about sexism in the presidential race. What was your reaction to this, to these guys telling Hillary to smile?
So I've seen a number of humorous memes and tweets saying things like, you know, Hillary Clinton should smile more and talk softer, also curtsy, you know, and there are only two candidates in this race who've been told to smile more, Carly Fiorina and Hillary Clinton, but it's not about gender, right? But here's the thing, you know, Secretary Clinton is simply treated differently for being a woman running for a position that has historically been held by a man. I absolutely think we should call out this type of misogyny when it's so blatant and when we don't see this type of policing happening to other candidates. Melanie Price came up with this great list of, you know, how to tell if your cookies is Clinton or sexist, saying, you know, if you decided to hate Hillary Clinton first and then collected substantive policy reasons as justification, you might be an aversive sexist, you know. And I think she's just asking us to, you know, am I judging this candidate in ways that no candidate could ever measure up? And if we find that we are engaging in gender discrimination, then we have an opportunity to course correct. Halting those discriminatory impulses does not guarantee a vote for Clinton, but it won't mean that she is judged fairly and not based solely on our ingrained and implicit gender biases.
Yeah. Michelle, your reaction to guys telling Hillary to smile?
Yeah, I think that women definitely have a bit of a challenge when they want to be taken seriously, because if you yell too much, you can be called the B word, and they want you to be more congenial. And they've got a point in a sense, because people expect women to be a little bit happier and nicer. Yet, you know, when you hear Hillary's voice, she has really lowered her voice and almost kept it fairly monotone. But I understand that as a woman, because when I get excited and I raise my voice, I've had people comment to me many times, "Oh, you sound too young when your voice goes up. You need to lower your voice so that people take you more seriously." And I think that's just an issue that women candidates have to deal with, unfortunately. They have the public, and I don't necessarily attribute it to sexism, but the public just expects women to act a little bit differently than they do men. And if women are out there yelling and pointing their finger all the time, I don't think people are as attracted to a woman that does that as they are to a man.
Well, President Obama announced his nominee for U.S. Supreme Court. He says that his nominee, Merrick Garland, is uniquely qualified to serve on the court immediately. Do you think, Michelle Litchens, that Merrick Garland should be a hearing in the U.S. Senate for the Supreme Court nominee?
Well, there's two things. We've heard from some of our senators that they're going to follow the Biden rule, because it was Joe Biden when he was chair of the Judiciary Committee under President Bush, where he told President Bush early on that because it's an election year, that they are not going to have any hearings if there was an opening on the Supreme Court, because it would just be too political and they need to have the next president choose their nominee. So, I mean, he's already set the precedent for that. At the same time, I do believe that they should be interviewing Merrick, and they should, you know, start the process. Like Chuck Grassley is the chair of the Judiciary Committee right now, and he's voted against him, Merrick, a few times. So obviously he's not a big fan. But I think the public wants to see that the process is moving forward. Now, it took the Democrats, 18 months to decide that they didn't like Judge Bork? So, I mean, just because they start, you know, talking to him and they have hearings, it doesn't mean that they need to approve someone immediately right away. But I do think that the public would like to see that the process is working, just because the Democrats have set a precedent that you don't need to have hearings, or that you can, you know, put off approving someone for 18 months. Doesn't mean that the Republicans have to do the same thing, but I do think the public wants to see that they are starting to work through the process.
Yeah. And do you think that's going to happen, Kelly?
So I think the White House is going to focus on Merrick Garland as a person, whereas I think the Republicans are really going to focus on this process issue, as Michelle pointed out. So I think the White House will argue that this, by all accounts, is one of the most widely admired jurors in our country, and will focus on who Garland is. I know some members of the Congressional Black Caucus have expressed their frustration with President Obama because this is a 63-year-old white man. And the White House will argue that, again, President Obama has appointed more African-Americans to the bench than any other president, more African-American women, and because the President Obama commits to diversity, that we're going to hear a lot of names that he made the shortlist that, again, might come up in the upcoming years. In terms of the Biden rule, I think it's really clear we should discuss the fact that the rule is not actually a rule. Again, it came from Biden's sort of comments on the floor, but he did release the following statement that he said, quote, "Nearly a quarter century ago in June of 1992, I gave a lengthy speech on the Senate floor about a hypothetical vacancy on the Supreme Court. Some critics say that one excerpt of my speech is evidence that I opposed filling a Supreme Court vacancy in an election year. This is not an accurate description of my views in this subject. Indeed, as I conclude in the same statement, critics are pointing to today, urge the Senate and the White House to work together to overcome partisan differences to ensure the court functions as founding fathers intended. That remains my position today." And so, again, I don't think we can really be using this Biden rule as a precedent in terms of arguing for policy, but I do think Republicans will use that and continue to use that as well.
We're going to turn our attention to the state Supreme Court after our break. There is, of course, a race for state Supreme Court justice. There is a debate between the two candidates tonight, which you will hear on Wisconsin Public Radio and can see on Wisconsin Public Television. And we will we'll talk with our guests about that race and other top stories in state politics. The Senate passed a slew of bills and left some on the table. We'll talk about what the Senate passed and didn't pass coming up, too. And we'll welcome your views, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Michelle Litchens and Kelly Wills on this edition of The Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in state politics now, turning our attention to state. Our guests are Michelle Litchens, who is a former Republican state representative, a small business owner from Elm Grove, and Kelly Wills, who is making her Week in Review debut. She's an associate professor of communication and theater arts at UW-Marshfield, Wood County, also a blogger at the Huffington Post. You can join us tonight at 7 for the Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate debate, sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Television, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg and WPR's Sean Johnson will moderate the debate between State Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley and Appeals Court Judge Joanne Kloppenburg as they vie for a seat on the state's highest court. So that Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate debate will be tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio and television. And by the way, also on our state capitol report, we will have both of the candidates in separate candidate forums. We'll hear from Justice Bradley first from 7 until 7:30, and then we'll hear from Judge Kloppenburg from 7:30 until 8 during our state capitol report on Monday. Okay, that out of the way. Let's talk about this race. Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley and her challenger, Appeals Court Judge Joanne Kloppenburg, debated earlier this week. Bradley's collegiate writings got a lot of attention during that debate. Bradley again apologized for her columns criticizing gays, abortion, and women's role in date rape. Kloppenburg noted that Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark, who has criticized same-sex marriage, is helping Bradley's campaign, and therefore, Kloppenburg says there's no evidence in Bradley's so-called change of attitude. Kelly, we'll start with you on this one. Do you accept Bradley's apology for those writings 24 years ago when she was in college, or do you think that this is a legitimate issue today?
So I will say, this is one of the reasons I will never run for political office, because I would hate for someone to be looking at what I wrote when I was in my 20s. But again, I think this goes to the fact that these are issues that will come before her when she is Supreme Court Justice. And so again, this isn't something that we can really dismiss, because a lot of these sort of comments that she has made are things that she's going to be having to deal with when she's on the court. And so I think when she apologized, what people really needed from her were to own those words and acknowledge those mistakes, and I just don't think that she did that. I think she kind of blamed her worldview, she blamed the content and tone, she blamed her age and immaturity, but at no point did she really actually take responsibility and own her words and didn't just say, look, I made a mistake, those were some really vile things to say, and really coming out and being honest about that.
What do you think, Michelle?
Well, there's so many things here, but just like Kelly said, oh my goodness, what I wrote when I was in college and what I said. I mean, when we were in school, you tried to get to the extreme of both sides. I was just talking with a Democrat friend of mine from college, and we used to go at it all the time, and he said the same thing. He's like, I hope no one ever digs up what I said and wrote when I was in college, because that's kind of what you do when you are in school. But the fact that she did apologize for what she said, and she has shown that she doesn't think that way anymore now. She has presided over numerous adoptions by same-sex couples. If she still had those heartfelt feelings and she was going to use that from the bench, she would never have allowed those adoptions to happen. But the fact that the press is going back 24 years, that they can't find that she did anything as a judge that would, you know, cause people to, would cause alarm right now that she was doing something inappropriate or wrong or discriminatory. They had to go back 24 years to find something. I mean, that says she's doing a pretty good and fair job as a judge right now, and they are looking for anything to disqualify her. And to get to that other article that they wrote, which was completely ridiculous, they were trying to accuse her of having an extramarital affair when she was representing someone about a child custody case, which never happened. Her ex-husband actually said, and he told the paper before the article was written, that they were already separated. It was not called an extramarital affair. You know, the fact that the paper still wrote that as a hit piece, again, because they have nothing else to use against Rebecca Bradley except for a few of these extraneous, you know, items to try to discredit her. This is ridiculous. It is a smear campaign, and it's again shown that Rebecca Bradley has been a good judge at her job, and the only thing that they can try to use are these just crazy outlandish stories to try to discredit her.
Well, let's move on to the state Senate adjourned its legislative session for this session. They returned to Madison for final votes of the year on Tuesday and took action on a number of legislative items before adjourning late in the night. Lawmakers were at the Capitol to look at more than 80 bills, including plans to allow online voter registration. That passed, and the governor did sign that into law already. Amnesty from underage drinking tickets for victims of sexual assaults, many other major bills that did not end up on the calendar that have now are dead, and we can talk about those as well. But let me ask you, Michelle, first, why did the Assembly and now the Senate have to wrap things up so early, some say?
I don't know if it's necessarily that early, but the campaign season is going to start getting underway shortly, and so they just kind of wanted to get the work out of the way, I'm assuming. But at the same time, most of these bills, in fact, all of these bills that they just took up recently have been, you know, in the docket. They've been going through committees. People have been talking about them for the last year and a half. So it was just time to get the bills done.
Kelly?
So I think there's just a few issues with some of the bills. I think they have the same-day registration. I think some argue that this could mean that key Democratic constituencies might be less likely to vote. I think a lot of these were sort of rushed through without a lot of sort of debate on them. And so I think there are some problems with a lot of these bills that did pass through.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the bill that they're eligible voters with a state-issued driver's license or ID card can register online to vote starting in next spring's elections. Opponents don't like the law, which was signed by Governor Walker, because it eliminates officials known as special registration deputies and would effectively end voter registration drives in the state. Michelle, is that good or bad policy?
It's good policy. It is easy to register to vote in the state of Wisconsin, and I think a lot of leftist organizations were using those lists actually to recruit members and to get more of their folks to the polls. And so I don't think it was always done in a very honest way. I think this is great. Having moved myself recently, being able to register to vote online, I think this makes it easier for people to vote. I know in many other states, when you go to the DMV, you automatically get registered to vote. That would be a nice thing to have in the state of Wisconsin as well. So I think this was a good thing for voters in Wisconsin. And, you know, looking at what they did this year, they have accomplished a lot. You know, they held the line on property taxes. All new money that came into Wisconsin had to go to Medicaid, so they did what they could to increase spending to our schools. They held the line on college tuition. You know, I think Republicans really did accomplish a lot over this last, you know, year and a half session, and I think the voters are going to be really happy with what they did this fall.
Yeah. Kelly, do you want to talk more about the good or bad policy for this ending the voter registration drives with this new law?
I guess I just don't understand why we needed to end that as well. I mean, we can have online voter registration and also have those other groups be able to do what they were doing before. I don't understand the reason that we needed to sort of have an either or there. And Wisconsin is routinely among the top states in the nation for voter participation because historically we've made it really easy for people to vote. And so anytime that there are changes, anytime we make it more difficult for people to possibly get involved in this process, I think we should pause, and I think that's problematic. And so I think that we really do need to consider that, especially when, you know, anyone that argues that there's widespread voter fraud, that's just simply not true. And so, again, I think anytime we hear these changes being made because there is such, quote-unquote, widespread voter fraud, I think that should be a flag. And I think again, we should be encouraging people to, I mean, some states have gone so far as to make everyone automatically registered in the state already so that it's much easier for them to be registered. And I see us going in a direction where we're making it more difficult.
The Senate also passed a bill that would prohibit local governments from banning certain containers, including plastic bags. Kelly, how do you feel about municipalities, local governments, not being allowed to enforce their own local plastic bag ban?
Well, I just think it's sort of contrary to a lot of Republican sort of beliefs, is that, you know, again, that big government shouldn't get in the way of local control in terms of what they want to do in terms of their areas there. And so I think it goes against that was the most striking to me in this bill, was that just seemed as though this was, in effect, sort of big government coming in and taking control over these local municipalities there.
Yeah, what about what how come the state is telling local governments what to do again, Michelle?
Well, I think if the state wants businesses to come into Wisconsin and do business here, we need to give them a little bit of uniformity and some security that if they come in and do business here, that we are not going to make it nearly impossible to do business in some parts of the state. And so that was definitely something that businesses were asking for, just to give them that security that they can continue to doing business as they would like to do it in the state, as long as they're obeying the law. You know, and you'll see, I don't know about folks listening, but man, I carry my own bags into most stores now, and I think that's something that is definitely taking off. People are tired of those darn little plastic bags. But they've also talked about how when folks recycle those plastic bags, it uses less, or it has a less of an environmental impact than creating paper bags. So and the cloth bags. So you know, there's two different sides of that coin when it comes to the environment. But I think they did the right thing by telling businesses when you come into the state of Wisconsin that there is uniformity when it comes to doing business across the state with your products.
Most of Governor Walker's college affordability package passed the Senate, but senators did not vote on the centerpiece of the legislation, which would lift a cap on student loan interest deductions. The bills that passed will fund fund need-based and emergency grants for technical college students and internship coordinator positions in the State Department of Workforce Development, and require schools to provide students annual updates on loan balances. A lot there, but Kelly, you're with a University of Wisconsin system campus. Do you think that these will help students, or do they not go far enough? What do you think?
So as someone who has about $40,000 in student loans, because I went to school for a very long time, I can say that, you know, one of the big things I would have liked to see, you know, would have been something, you know, along the lines of reducing interest rates and things like that for these loans. And so I think that was a really big miss for this bill.
And Michelle?
Yeah, I certainly would have liked to have seen them all go through the Senate. I understand the Senate's points by saying that Wisconsin just doesn't have enough money to pay for all of them right now, and I'm definitely opposed to borrowing any money. So I understand why they didn't do this, but it certainly would have been nice if they could have been able to make this all work.
Yeah. Very briefly, a bill that would help parents get a child seizure treatment in the form of cannabis oil failed to get a vote under a hastily adjourned Senate session. Michelle, should senators have voted on this legalization of this cannabis oil to help children with seizures?
Yeah, there is no doubt that the Senate should have taken up this bill and they should have passed it. I do not understand why some people are unwilling to allow, you know, these children who are facing these seizures on a daily basis, why we are not giving them that respite. I don't understand. This is not a gateway to marijuana. I really don't understand why the Senate didn't take this up. This really should have been an easy vote for them. You know, it's coming back next year, and hopefully we hear from more of those parents and they really, you know, twist the arms of a few senators to make sure that this happens.
Kelly, briefly on that.
I agree. Yeah, this is really heartbreaking. Again, for so many families, this is one of the few treatments that really does work for them and their children. And so the idea that the Senate wouldn't even take it up for debate or discussion is pretty troubling.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go. The Wisconsin Tourism Department unveiled some new ads this week before the Governor's Conference on Tourism. And one of them focuses on the Wisconsin Supper Club, that we have fun in Wisconsin and we like to have old fashions at supper clubs. Very briefly, Michelle, what do you think of the new ad?
I love it. I absolutely love it, because in Wisconsin we do enjoy our fish fries and our old fashions.
Yeah. Kelly?
Agree, 100%. I have nothing bad to say about these at all.
Thanks very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having us, Joy.
Michelle Litchens is a small business owner from Elm Grove and a former Republican state representative, and Kelly Wills is an associate professor of communication and theater arts at UW-Marshfield Wood County. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network.